It's time for another exciting edition of the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. Stay tuned as we discuss local and national sports from Southeast Missouri and beyond. And now, without further ado, let's get on with the show. And welcome to another exciting edition of the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. I'm Mike Bueller.
I'm Mark Sanders.
I'm Kyle Roberts.
And we are counting down to Thanksgiving, but I'm not even waiting till Thanksgiving to go Christmassy, as I'm already wearing a Grinch hat right now. Go figure.
Well, I think we've really blurred the lines about where the end of year holidays start. I mean, they get Christmas decorations out in the stores at the same time they put out Halloween candy. So I figure whatever your bag is, just go ahead and let that roll. You know, if you want to go Halloween until Valentine's Day, do that. If you want to keep your Christmas tree up all year long, whatever makes you happy, man. Life's too short.
Exactly. And we have got an exciting show today. We're going to be talking about a lot of things later on. We are going to have an appearance by Three Rivers College women's basketball coach Alex Wiggs as they get ready to take a trip down deep into the heart of Texas. But first off, we are going to talk about the National Football League, and Mark Sanders, take it away.
Well, it is Thanksgiving, and so we have three interesting games on the lineup. Of course, the traditional Thanksgiving teams, Detroit and Dallas, are playing, and then a couple of other teams that have been part of some memorable Thanksgiving Day games will be playing in the night game. I love three games on Thanksgiving. I think it's absolutely brilliant. Our early game is going to be the Chicago Bears visiting the Detroit Lions. Detroit is the best team in football right now, but
it's the end of the world as we know it, folks.
Yeah, we're gonna have to stop saying that. I mean, there's it's consistent this year, but here's the thing, and I think we need to look out for this. I think there is a real possibility that this could be a trap game for Detroit. Now, they did win in Indianapolis only 24-6. They only scored 24 points. And although I think it's unlikely that they'll lose to the Bears, we have to consider that the Bears lost on a fluke special teams play against Green Bay. They outplayed Green Bay 2 weeks ago. And then they came back. Of course, there was some Minnesota special teams stupidity that let them back into that game at the very end of the fourth quarter, but they still made the plays when they had the opportunity to make the plays. And so I really think Chicago could go into Detroit with a YOLO, we've got nothing to lose attitude, and Detroit is already thinking about their first round bye and who they're going to match up against in the playoffs. And the big thing about this is that if Detroit drops this game to Chicago, that puts them in a tie with the Vikings. Now, they have the tiebreaker right now because they beat the Vikings earlier in the year, but that could mean that the last game of the season, Minnesota at Detroit, could be the game that decides the number one seed and home field advantage throughout the playoffs. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying if Chicago pulls the upset, you heard it here first. If. Our next game is the New York Giants, who are currently without a quarterback. In case you didn't hear, this is breaking news today. Quarterback Daniel Jones, who was cut by the Giants less than a week ago, has signed to the practice squad with the Minnesota Vikings. So there's some speculation that he might be an insurance policy for the Vikings should Sam Darnold get hurt before the end of this season or in the playoffs. Of course, Jones does have playoff experience. Unfortunately, he won't be playing against a defense that is coached by Ed Donatell the way he did when he beat the Vikings on the road 2 years ago. They will be on the road without Daniel Jones at the Dallas Cowboys, who are also struggling to find a good quarterback, although Cooper Rush did play pretty well in their upset of the Washington Commanders. So I really don't know what to say about this game. Dallas should take care of the Giants at home. But Dallas has been terrible. The Giants have been terrible. And the fact of the matter is sometimes when you have two terrible teams playing, you can have an entertaining game. And if not, hopefully the turkey will put you into a food coma and you won't notice. The evening game, and again, as a Vikings fan, this is of big interest to me. You've got the Miami Dolphins with Tua. Again, he's, you know, betting his life, his future, his health against trying to race back into the playoff conversation in the AFC. So the Dolphins are going to the not-quite-yet-frozen tundra up in northern Milwaukee, a.k.a. Green Bay, Wisconsin, to take on the Packers. And there's nothing I would love more to see the Packers drop a game to the Dolphins. So I'm going to have to dig out some teal and orange, I think. But I will be pulling for Tua and the Dolphins to pull that upset in Green Bay. So any thoughts from either of you on our three Thanksgiving games?
It's always fun watching the Lions midday. It's going to be even funner this year. Whenever the Cowboys play, I am rooting for whoever's playing Dallas.
It's a good way to go. All right, let's take a run through our Sunday and Monday lineup. The Arizona Cardinals will be visiting my Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings are 3.5-point favorites. If Arizona plays the way that they played last week at Seattle, Minnesota should win this game going away. Unfortunately, games that Minnesota should win going away usually come down to a last-second field goal, so let's not count our chickens. Las Vegas, the Raiders, will be visiting Kansas City, and we'll see if Kansas City can get their stuff together before the playoffs start.
They are Black Friday, no less.
They are not looking like the number one seed in the AFC. They're looking very vulnerable right now. There's no excuse for how they played at Carolina. Yeah, they won, but I'm going to go on a rant here. Okay, when Minnesota blows a late lead and wins an overtime against Chicago, they're terrible, they're frauds, their 9-2 record doesn't mean anything. But when Kansas City blows a late lead to the Carolina Panthers and has to come back and win with a last-second field goal, it's like, well, they're the champs, what are you going to say? They're great, blah, 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 blah. I'm telling you right now, and you've got me on tape saying this, if Kansas City came to Minnesota next week, the Vikings would beat them at home.
Boom!
Absolutely, absolutely. And so, you know, well, I mean, we're not – the only way that we can see a Minnesota-Kansas City matchup is in the Super Bowl, and I'm totally okay with that. But
well, that'd be wild.
But, you know, Kansas City's going to have to find that next gear, and maybe the return of Isaac Pacheco, which could conceivably happen this week, will help out with that offense. But – They've got to start putting some things together. They cannot coast on reputation and past victories. Here's another interesting AFC matchup. The Pittsburgh Steelers traveling to the Cincinnati Bengals.
This
definitely has playoff implications. Cincinnati's not eliminated yet, but they've got to put together a win streak while Pittsburgh is still in the conversation. Certainly for an AFC North championship, they want to have that home field advantage in the divisional round, and they're not eliminated for the number one seed, although that's probably going to end up going to Buffalo or Kansas City, one or the other. So, you know, you've got Pittsburgh with a great defense going up against Joe Burrow, who's a great quarterback, but Cincinnati has no defense. But Pittsburgh's offense has struggled the past couple of weeks. So we'll see how that plays out. Mike, your favorite team, the Tennessee Titans, are traveling to Washington to play the Commanders. And that game looked like a mismatch 3 or 4 weeks ago when Jaden Daniels was putting up Rookie of the Year statistics. Washington has struggled. They've dropped their last couple of games, and Tennessee upset division rival Houston in a fantastic performance on the road last week. So is Tennessee figuring out some things?
They might be, but I'm still not sold on it. I mean, we did our dead level worst to give the Texans that game. We gave up an 80-yard kickoff return on to open the game. Then on the first play from scrimmage, let the Texans score a touchdown at the end of the third quarter. Levis threw a pick six that allowed the Texans to take the lead. How we won that game after playing like garbage, I don't know if it's that we did a great put forth a great effort or if it's that the Texans just acted like we had Admiral Ozzel on our side, or acted like we had Darth Vader on our sidelines looking at Admiral Ozzel.
Yeah. Speaking of Houston, they're on the road at Jacksonville, and this should be a good way for the Texans to put their playoff hopes back on track. That should be an easy win. But again, Houston's going to have to show us something. It's almost like that game that they should have won against Detroit kind of broke them, really set them back for the next couple of weeks.
May have. Kyle, you got some thoughts?
You know, I don't understand how in the world y'all won that football game last week when Will Levis would have been in a body cast at halftime.
Uh-huh.
7 first-half sacks. My concern with Houston is I think they're just having a sophomore slump, and it's not solely C.J. Stroud. It's not D'Amico Ryans. I think it's just as a collective, because maybe they played slightly over expectations last year, and now maybe they're coming back a little bit. You've got to finish ball games. Now, they're playing Jacksonville, and I know you're a huge fan of theirs, but their issue isn't talent. It's Doug Peterson.
Right, yeah, and you know,
he's have Trevor Lawrence healthy right now, but that's a talented football team that's in an abusive relationship with a coach that doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, the next game on the schedule, I believe this is the afternoon game of the week on Sunday. It's the Philadelphia Eagles, who are suddenly looking as good as their 9-2 record, going up against the Baltimore Ravens, who have struggled. Lately, their record, you know, they're sitting in second place. They're currently sitting in a wild card position. I think Baltimore gets way too much respect from the national media. I also think the same is true of Philadelphia. This is one of those games that that a good friend of mine, who you're going to hear from here very shortly, would say that you know, rooting for a meteor to strike the stadium during gameplay. I think Baltimore, I'm going to go with Baltimore by a field goal in this game. But, I mean, sorry, that's my daily crank call from DirecTV trying to sell me something that I absolutely do not want.
They want to make you an offer you can't refuse.
Yeah. The Sunday night football game, San Francisco at Buffalo. I'm sure in the first part of the season, this looked like a great matchup. San Francisco is cooked. Their quarterback is hurt. They are not the same team. Buffalo should win that game going away.
And last but not least.
Yeah, Cleveland at Denver on Monday night football. You don't know what you're going to get out of Cleveland. I do know that Jameis Winston is entertaining, mm-hmm. if nothing else. If you're talking about a YOLO quarterback, I mean, you're talking about a guy with absolutely nothing to lose. So he's going to be chucking it downfield against a tough Denver defense. You know, Denver looks like they're going to make it into the playoffs. And, you know, and if they manage to win a game in the, well, if they manage to make it in the playoffs, because all of this voting happens before the playoffs. But if Denver makes it to the playoffs, you really have to start talking about Bo Nix as Rookie of the Year.
Agreed. Kyle?
No, no doubt. And everyone immediately wrote him off in the beginning saying, well, awfully nice of Denver to draft a 30-year-old rookie. But the fact is, he's got Sean Payton. Sean Payton, last I checked, knows how to coach quarterbacks. And Bo Nix, you've seen the progressive improvement on a week-to-week basis. And if he's able to get Denver into the playoffs, you really might have to consider changing that vote that originally seemed like it was unanimously going to be Jaden Daniels. I think that game's going to be a lot of fun simply because that game's at, I believe it's at Cleveland.
No, it's at Denver. It's at Denver.
Oh, it's at Denver. Yeah. Either way, cold weather favors both teams, but you're right. There's no more yellow quarterback than Famous Jameis. So either he's eating dubs or taking home a fresh hot ale from Club Shay Shay. So whichever.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I watched quite a bit of college football before last year's draft, and I watched a lot of Oregon games, a lot of Washington games. I was really impressed with Michael Penix Jr. I was even more impressed with Bo Nix. I couldn't understand all of the shade that he was getting from all of the so-called experts on the draft talking about Bo Nix as a second-round pick. Bo Nix is not qualified to be an NFL quarterback. All I saw him do at Oregon was win, 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 no matter what. Mm-hmm. And now he's showing the same skill and determination in Denver.
What I think a lot of that came from is the bad Bo Nix games you would see him have at Auburn, and also the fact that he wasn't making NFL throws all the time at Oregon. It was very much an RPO, dink and dunk, what I call a Tom Brady offense, where a lot of the time he's just throwing essentially check downs, and a lot of it was run after catch with the talent surrounding him. But he's a super smart quarterback, and he is very tough, and he's more of a leader than people were willing to give him credit for. So I think Denver's the right marriage for him in terms of quarterback to team.
Yeah, and God forbid anyone ever run a Tom Brady style offense. That guy never did anything in the league.
Not at all. Water the lawn and everything.
Yeah, the only problem I have with Denver is that Sean Payton is their head coach, and I hate Sean Payton with the red hot fire of a thousand suns. So
that sounds. Go ahead.
I didn't know about that.
Oh, well, that goes all the way back to Sean Payton being the coach of the New Orleans Saints when they had Bounty Gate against Brett Favre's 2009 year for the Vikings. Yes. They should have been prosecuted for war crimes after that game.
him and Greg Williams.
Ugh, terrible, terrible. Well, we're going to take a break right now, and when we return, we're going to have a special guest, my friend Mike Tucker, who's going to talk about changes and the future with the St. Louis Blues.
There you go, and you are listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle, and we'll see you in a minute.
One.
And welcome back to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. And we have the first of two special guests on our show today. Mark Sanders, you've got your friend Mike Tucker on the phone, and you guys are going to talk a little bit of St. Louis Blues. Take her away.
That's right. The Blues are currently in fifth place in the Central Division of the NHL Western Conference. They have 21 points, which is currently 3 points off of the last wild card spot in the West. About a week ago, they fired their head coach, Drew Binnington, and hired Jim Montgomery, who was suddenly fired from the Boston Bruins after amassing, this is not a typo, I did the math, a 110 wins, 41 losses, and 23 ties. That was his record in two-plus seasons
Wow.
with the Bruins. Monty is a former Blues player and assistant coach, and he won his debut as head coach 5-2 earlier this week on the road against the New York Rangers. Joining us today is Mike Tucker, whose credentials include sports and music journalism. He was cartoonist for St. Louis's Game Night Review publication, a pre-Blues game tabloid sold on the streets outside of the arena. He did that for 10 years. And he is currently co-author of an awesome web novel called Armies of the Night. He also plays a really mean guitar. Tuck is a lifelong Blues fan who's going to discuss the change at head coach and what this means for the Notes' future. Tuck, welcome to the Sports Desk.
Hello, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, so first of all, how excited are you about Montgomery's hiring?
I'm really excited, and here's why. As you noted, I am a lifelong Blues fan. My dad and my uncle were inaugural season ticket holders. My uncle still has the seats from the arena in his basement. So I've been going to Blues games literally my entire life. I mean, I was an infant. I was in the carrier thing, the, yeah. At my parents' feet kind of thing. It's not apocryphal. It actually happened in family lore. So, but that's it. I'm just a fan, right? I'm not nearly as hardwired in as I used to be back when we were doing the game night review days or even some of the web stuff that we were doing after that. So But from over here, as a fan, this is just my opinion. I have never skated a minute in the league. I don't really know what's going on. Haven't been in that locker room since Gretzky was an Edmonton Oiler. So that's how long ago it was.
Yeah.
But from over here, it looks like, you know, can we all agree that the Bannister hiring had a lot of Davis Payne energy about it? I mean, they, you know, it was kind of a stopgap to sort of between windows of, you know, opportunity, right? And right. So just like Davis Payne was supposed to get us to shutter the Mike Yeo era. But, you know, that worked out okay. We had Chief out of it, right? They had the same thing. They had a line of succession. We were going to see, you know, who's going to be Otter, or it was going to be Claude Julien, you know. Another Adams-winning coach that Boston fired. But, you know, whatever. So, you know, if anything, nobody hates Drew Bannister. We know, no shame in this. He was only on a two-year deal anyway. That said, you know, I think that the Monty hiring has definitely accelerated the timeline a little bit. And I just, you know, we saw it the other night against the Rangers. They actually shot the puck on goal. It was amazing. You know, it was that, like
that's
they
kind of the
like
point.
40 shots on goal.
Yeah,
as opposed to, I think, like maybe they had 40 shots on goal for all of November otherwise, something like that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but shooting the puck at the net is good in hockey, right?
Yes, good things happen when you go to the net, whether it's the puck or the player. That's basic, really. So that was nice to see. There was some you know, there's initiative in the game. There's a little nervousness in their game. Then people got, you know, people were sort of, you know, skating with purpose for a while. It was kind of neat to see. It was like, who are these guys? I haven't seen this since, you know, before Chief left. Not right. To beat that one into the ground. Yeah. We're not going to do that. We will leave that for all the Instagram experts to point out. So,
what does Monty bring to the Blues that you think will improve the team immediately?
He's been there. As you noted, his win percentage is just ridiculous. And that was just, I'm pretty sure you just hit the Boston one. I mean, he won like a madman with Dallas and even with Denver in college. The dude just knows how to coach. And we've seen it at all levels. He was in the USHL coaching before he went to Denver and you know, did very, very well with those teams. You can look up the stats because they did. You know, I think he also brings an authority because of that, because of his win percentage, because he's been here. You know, he played for the Blues. He knows, you know, Bernie and stuff. And, you know, there looked to me like there were guys on the ice where maybe last week they weren't too worried about maybe I'll end up in the press box or maybe I'm going to lose my minutes. But Tuesday night, there was a little bit more, not effort. It's hockey. You have to always try. I don't ever question a player's effort. But, you know, these guys were actually playing for a little bit higher stakes.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Blues roster. How does this roster look to you now, considering the leadership that Montgomery brings?
Well, I always like the roster. I've seen there's a lot of, you know, as we talked about a second ago, a lot of internet experts out there who, you know, they couldn't, since he didn't trade for Ovechkin over the summer, it was a total failure of the bus. The moves that Army made were weird because they didn't track, because they didn't make sense to, you know, the average fan. And I liked that. I liked that I didn't know what was going on. I liked that I couldn't just look at this and go, well, obviously this is going to be, you know, he wants him for the second power play or whatever. You know, it wasn't that. It was sort of like, well, this is just crazy enough that it might work. Getting both Joseph brothers, right? And then, you know, the move in Edmonton with the offer sheet.
And credit general manager Doug Armstrong. I mean, he actually went to Bannister and said, sorry, we're going to fire you because there's a Jim Montgomery's available and we're going to hire him. So we're going to have to let you go because we're going to hire a better coach.
I have always said that, you know, you've seen me online and whatever. And, you know, in Army, we trust. I mean, the guy's done it before. Now, he won with the Blues in 19, and they gave him a cup in Dallas in 99. So he must have something going on, right?
Right.
Foot was in the crease. Hull's foot was in the crease, and Hull's foot was in the crease. But anyway, that being said, you know, I still think Banisher, you know, he's only on a 2-year deal. So it wasn't like, you know, he was not the long-term solution anyway. I don't think anybody anywhere thought that, including Banisher. He would never say it, but that would be my guess. So okay. For all these goofballs online who've been talking about, well, you know, how many coaches is Army going to get to fire in his career? Well, you know what? He only had like a short-term deal to begin with. So this was, you know, like I said, the timeline just accelerated when Boston was generous enough to get rid of another Jack Adams winner. It's great.
And, you know, the question
I'm surprised they haven't figured out a way to bring Bruce Cassidy on staff, honestly.
True, yeah.
Why don't we go get them all?
Of course, the question on the mind of all Blues fans, you know, you would think that the Stanley Cup victory in 2019 would be enough, but once you get a taste, you want to get back up to the top of the mountain again. So is Monty the right coach to make the Blues a true cup contender? And what kind of time frame do you think we're looking at for that to happen?
Okay, well, first of all, your dude, Bill Simmons, says that each fan base gets 5 years to savor a win before they can start getting grumpy again. So now we're back into the grumpy place, you know, according to the Simmons rule.
Right.
So, okay, you know. Yeah, I think Monty makes us a threat 100%. When and how, geez, who knows, right? The window of opportunity of the previous cup winner, I will go to my grave convinced that they were going to go back to back in 2020. And then when the pandemic hit and then they came up with that really interesting playoff structure, that miraculously just sort of seemed to really, you know, favor the East Coast
team. Was better than the 19 team.
But
and then
that being said,
hold on. Yeah, go ahead, Kyle. Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, I like going in because that 2019 team, which made me cry most tears I've cried since my daughter was born. I'd like to add, that team only had 99 points. But the 2020 team was on pace to destroy all of that, and then the momentum got halted, and then we got put in that weirdo structure, and we had to play Vancouver, who I don't feel we were prepared to play. So you're absolutely right that you get about a 5-year window to really appreciate that first title, and then you're like, all right, what do we got to do, and how are we looking, and so on and so forth. I don't care how many coaches we got to fire to get there. I've been through a lot of coaches, and I know we've never met.
That's right. It's not our money.
We don't care. We lost it in 96. Gary Thorne, my favorite play-by-play man in hockey, ruined my childhood. But I've been through a lot of coaches. Obviously, you know, we had Quinville and then Kitchen and Payne and all. I'm not going to mention all of them and ruin my day. But the fact is, however long it takes – and a big thank you to the Boston Bruins and the impatience of Cam Neely and Don Sweeney to do this again. Thank you for the Jack Adams winner.
Yeah. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, so towards all of that, right?
Yeah.
Since they, you know, they came out of nowhere to win in 19, there was no reason why they weren't gonna win 20, and then, you know, pandemic hit. You can't predict. You just absolutely don't know.
Right.
If, you know, our favorite player Nadri doesn't go into Binnington, who knows what happens in that series, right?
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, I don't think well, there are a lot smarter guys than me who are going to try and handicap this thing and say, oh yeah, they'll get to the second round or whatever. Yeah, that's great, fine, whatever. The nice thing is, the fun thing is that they're playing fun again. They're blocking shots, they're taking shots on goal, there was a spark in that team. Yes, you're going to get that every time. It's called the new coach bump. It's why they call it that. So I'm really excited to watch the upcoming games and seeing just really, you know, where this goes. And that's the best thing. You can't predict or expect, you know, playoff success or championships or anything, but you can enjoy the game by game. And now they're fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thanks, Tuck. Thank you for joining us. We were going to have him dropping in from time to time. He's also got some opinions about the NFL and the impending playoffs, but we'll have to save that for another day. Tuck, thanks for joining us today, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, guys. Thanks very much. Have a great holiday.
And we will be back in a bit on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. And we are back here on the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. And joining me now is
Three Rivers College women's basketball coach Alex Wiggs. The Lady Raiders are in the middle of another strong season here in the early going, and they're getting ready to make a trip to Texas in the morning. But before they do, I am going to visit with Coach Wiggs. Coach, you know, first of all, I mean, another great start for you and the girls. You know, just you're coming off a big win Friday night against Shelton State. You know, what's it been like so far?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me. Appreciate you having me on the podcast, and excited to be here. But no, it's been, you know, 7-1 on the year. We made this schedule. Me and you talked early on in the summer about us kind of beefing up our schedule and making it a little harder than what it was last year with 12 returners, and just trying to see what we're made of early and test these girls early on. And being 7-1, like you said, a good win Friday night against the number 6 team in the country. And, you know, really excited with where we're at and the progress we've made since opening weekend.
Good deal. And you've got another big tournament coming up, you know, Friday and Saturday. Like I said, you're leaving in the morning. You've got Paris, Texas on Friday night, and then you're playing at Trinity Valley, which is a nationally ranked team, and another national tournament qualifier on Saturday. You know, what are your thoughts on those games?
You know, we've got to be ready to go. That's one of the reasons we love this tournament. We started going last year, and we played Angelina and Trinity Valley, the team that won the regular season region, and then the one that won the region tournament to go to the national tournament. So this year we're going down to play Paris, Paris on the season right now, they are 3-4 overall, but they just beat the number 21 ranked team in the country, Collin, by 2. And so we've got to make sure that we can't look ahead for Saturday's game against Trinity Valley. We've got to make sure that we're ready for Paris, who kind of unorthodox style. They play 5 guards, and they've got a 6'3 kid coming off the bench that plays a few minutes here and there, but they're really going to play 5 out. They're going to set a lot of guard-to-guard ball screens, and they're going to play a 2-1-2 zone, trap on the wings and trap in the corners. So some stuff that we haven't seen so far this year. So I'm excited for that challenge against Paris. And then, like you said, we know how good Trinity Valley is. We know their kind of history and the success that this program's had. So we have them on Saturday, and I'm sure it'll be just like last year, and it'll be a battle to end of regulation or overtime like last year was.
Cool deal. You know, I'm looking at your stats right now, and you've got 9 girls averaging between about 6.5 and 13 points a game. You know, that's a pretty nice balance. Take it away.
Yeah, it's I think that shows a depth of this team. You know, you look at that, and then you look at the fact that we have all 12 girls that are healthy and that are playing, averaging over 10 minutes a game. I mean, that really unheard of, you know, at the college level. And I think that just shows to our depth and kind of what this group is about. You know, looking at, like you said, looking at the stats, I know KT, Lex, Camille Brown, Bremaya Johnson, Jasmine Davis, like they've all been in our top 2 or 3. Layla Reese, top 2 or 3 scorers, just depends on the night. And again, that shows the unselfishness of this team. The fact that we only have 2 girls averaging double figures and we're scoring 82 points a game. You know, that just shows right there that they do a good job of, hey, if you're hot, if it's your night, we're going to keep finding you, we're going to keep feeding you. And they're excited to not only see that, but also whenever it's their turn, their night, they know that their teammates have their back and they're going to be excited to see them.
And on the other side of the coin, you've had, you know, a couple of girls already get region player of the week. So you've had a couple of them that when it's came time to step up to the plate and hit the ball a long way, they've crushed it.
Yeah. You know, we start off week 1, Lexi Weaver was region player of the week. And then this past week, Kaylee Thompson was region player of the week. In between there, you know, Bremiah Johnson had a week, I think, where she was averaging about 18 points a game. Unfortunately, somebody else in the region had a really good week that week, too. And so it's one of those that I feel like every week with the teams that we play, with the competition that we play, that we've always have players just depending on the week of competing for that region player of the week. And again, I think it shows our depth and everything like that, that it's a different player each week just depending on the week.
Excellent. And, you know, looking ahead a little bit, a couple weeks from now, you've got another big tournament coming up. You are headed down to the heart of Crimson Tide country in Tuscaloosa to take on Shelton State in a rematch, and then you're also going to be playing Pearl River out of Mississippi. You know, what are your thoughts on those games?
Yeah, we are turning into the Road Warriors. We've had several games at home, but now we are going on the road. And like you said, we go down to Shelton State, who is now number 7 in the country, and we also play Pearl River, which is number 11 in the country.
Wow.
And so, again, making sure that we can be as battle-tested as possible in our non-conference games and our non-region games. And that's an exciting time that, like I said, challenging the girls to, you know, it's kind of easy to bring it one night or one time a week. But getting their mindset of, hey, we've got to bring it two nights in a row. Because as you know, a national tournament is, you know, sometimes you play 3 days in a row. Maybe you play 4 days in a row. Just depends when your off day is. And you've got to make sure that you can lock in for that high competition, not only one night, but multiple nights in a row. And hopefully that's what our schedule's made us do.
And last but not least, the national tournament, that is the ultimate goal. And I'll let you go from there on that.
Yeah, you know, we've been very blessed, very fortunate that we've been 4 straight years, 5 out of the last 6 years. Only year we didn't make it during that stretch was whenever it got canceled by the by COVID, unfortunately. But you know, that's our goal. That's our goal, and we talk about every day that that's obviously our goal and what we want to accomplish at the end of the day. But the season's a process. Every day matters. You've got to stack days. You've got to win the day. You can't just show up and think that, oh, hey, we're guaranteed to make it to the national tournament. And I think that's the challenge that we face every single day is just the fact that we have got to, no matter if we win, beat Shelton State, you know, or whether we beat Vincennes or whether we lose to Wabash Valley, you know, you've got to come in the next day and you've got to put in the work, because if you're not, there's somebody else in the country doing that work. And we don't want to look back at it in April and think that, like, woulda, coulda, shoulda type thing. Like, you can't get days back. And that's what trying to teach them and trying to make sure that they understand is once a moment's gone, once a game's gone, once a day's gone, you can't go back and redo it. So take advantage of every opportunity. Take advantage of the day. And let's try to win the day so that way we prepare the best that we can for that national tournament and then that opportunity.
Sounds great. Thank you much. And that is Three Rivers College women's basketball coach Alex Wiggs. And you are listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. And welcome back to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. And we are now getting ready to talk some college sports, leading off with college football. And then we're going to wrap it up with a little bit on the Raiders and Lady Raiders. Mark, take it away.
Well, Mizzou put up a great win on the road against Mississippi State. Yes, Mississippi State is now a 2-9 team who is 0-7 in the SEC. But if there's one thing that you can always count on in the SEC, it's that road games are never easy. And they're never a given. You can ask Alabama about that after choking up a hairball against the Oklahoma Sooners. You can ask Texas A&M by laying a big fat egg at Auburn. And so Mizzou took care of business. And the one thing that I came away with watching that game, especially in the second half, is how different of a quarterback Brady Cook looks like when he's healthy. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Brady was not 100%, especially those games that we lost at Texas A&M, and of course he got knocked out in Alabama. And just now that you see that he's able to run, he's able to throw downfield again, he's able to get everyone organized. I loved how much they ran the ball. You know, I love it when Mizzou just acts like an old Big 12 power running team. It's like, we're just going to jam the ball down your throat. Their defense was swarming in Mississippi State's backfield. It was a really fun game to watch. And I think this weekend, it's going to be equally fun over Arkansas. Can't stand the Razorbacks, and I always look forward to Mizzou just beating the snot out of Arkansas, and this time it's this year it's going to happen at home in Como. So MIZZOU.
Kyle, take it away.
See, I'm completely on board with that, but I've watched a handful of Razorback games this year, and I know their record's 6-5. But, and shout out to them for making a bowl game. And I don't speak ill of them because my mother did reveal this year that she almost went to Arkansas to sing in choir. I digress. So I don't talk too hard on them. However, Talen Green, their quarterback, does present some big time problems. I mean, say what you will about the very loving offensive coordinator they have, Bobby Petrino, but the Hogs have talent. I just think that Coach Drink is a vastly better coach than Sam Pittman, and you're correct. Brady Cook, when he's healthy and his ankle's right, he's able to throw on the run, which I think is his bread and butter. He's not exactly a deep ball thrower from the pocket, but if you get him moving, it gets the receivers open. And, of course, that was a gorgeous touchdown Luther Burden caught in the back of the end zone.
Oh, that
Saturday
was amazing.
Night. Mississippi State. That's a catch you make for Sundays.
Yeah, I recorded the replay of that and sent it to Bueller saying, did you see that catch? I mean, it was just unbelievable. And, you know, this is going to be Luther Burden's last home game as a Tiger. He still has a year of eligibility left, but he is even more eligible to enter the NFL draft, and he is almost a dead lock to be a first-round draft pick, and somebody's going to get a really great wide receiver. And I think that Brady's going to throw him the ball a lot. I think this game this weekend is going to be a showcase for Luther to show his considerable talents to NFL scouts.
I also think the same for Theo Weiss Jr. because he is a senior, so I think this would be a showcase for him to be a day two pick and potentially an early day two pick. I'm looking for our defense to make some big time plays. Dalen Carnell had that scoop and score. He's a senior. I like how aggressive our secondary's been, even though Toriano Pride got himself in a bit of a scuffle. I really think that Mizzou will be super motivated by being senior day. Brady Cook is not about to lose his last home game as a Tiger. If it's a blowout, I'm not surprised in the least. And I like the fact that we could potentially finish with the same record as the almighty whine and crying Roll Tide fan base.
Yeah, I just, you know, I can't believe that Bama is still ranked 13. It's just ridiculous. I mean, this is not Bob Stoops' Oklahoma Sooners team. I mean, this is a terrible Oklahoma team that just completely humiliated the Crimson Tide last weekend. And, you know, the fact Mizzou wins on the road and they actually drop a spot in the rankings. Alabama gets pantsed on the road and they're still within spitting distance of the college football playoffs. And let's talk about these college football playoffs. First thing I want to say, I'm going to enjoy whatever meaningless exhibition bowl game that the Mizzou Tigers play in. I hope we win.
The Little Giant Vacuum Cleaner Bowl in Walla Walla, Washington.
Yeah, whatever. It's
go to the Gator Bowl.
Yeah, it's all good that way. But this college football playoff thing, the fact that the NCAA is essentially a toothless dying animal, and that they cannot get control over this because –
who is running college football? I mean, who is behind these college football playoffs? It's ridiculous that invisible pollsters get to select the top 12 teams in this. It should be a 16-team playoff. We should have it divided with specific criteria where every Division I conference gets their champion into the playoffs, and then if there's still spots left in a 16-team playoff, that there are specific criteria for this. The fact that we're letting people use style points and subjective preferences to decide who gets a chance to play for the title and who doesn't is absolutely ridiculous. It's a travesty, and I think it ruins the college football season.
My concern initially, I swear to you on everything, and I told one of my buddies who's a big Alabama fan, but he is very logical. I said, we need a 16-team playoff. This was years ago under that same format you presented. Now, with the lay of the conferences and the lay of the land with the FBS conferences, mainly two of them in particular, I'm very concerned that all 16 teams will do is open up more slots for the rich, and that's not what this should be about. The fact that the SEC is eating itself to me is glorious this year. But again, Alabama's just hovering around a 13 because I think that the College Football Playoff Committee is just waiting to have an excuse to throw Indiana out to remind them of their place, if you will, and that's crap.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And I think, again, what it really comes down to, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if what's really behind all of this is just television ratings, because plain and simple, everybody knows that Bama is going to draw bigger ratings on a bowl game than Indiana is. And that's no disrespect to Indiana, who've had a great season, but they're looking to move the needle in terms of ratings. And it's not fair. You know, you should get rewarded for what you do on the field to have the opportunity to play for the championship.
It isn't about name, it's about game. And guess what? Have you watched Alabama at its worst this year? Has anybody? Sure, I watched the Indiana game Saturday, and they finally got overwhelmed. Ohio State out-talented them on defense and in special teams, big time.
Yeah, that's dominating defensive performance by the Buckeyes. I hate Ohio State. I hate to give them credit for anything. But, I mean, I think the Detroit Lions would have struggled to score on Ohio State's defense the way they played last Saturday.
They were blitzing the dog. Like, Curtis Rourke had no time to throw that football. But I watched Alabama lose to Vanderbilt, which, weirdly, I felt in my gut that week that Alabama could have lost that game going into it, because I remember watching Vandy play against Virginia Tech and beat them, and I thought, that ain't the same Vanderbilt I'm used to.
No, Vandy's not a joke. Vandy, I mean, they're a mid-tier program in the SEC, but they're not cellar dwellers anymore.
By no means, but the problem with this is that Alabama's still hovering, and they can't go to the SEC championship game. That is absolutely locked in as Georgia and I believe either Texas or Texas A&M. But my point is they're still there, and people are complaining, oh, Indiana hasn't played anybody and this and that and the other and yada, yada, yada. Stop blaming players for what they have no control over. Reward them for doing what they're supposed to do against who they play. That's why, to me, March Madness and the FCS gets it right. Like, I'll give you an example. It was 2 years ago, Connecticut won the national title. You know they beat in the national title game? San Diego State.
Yeah, I don't think it's manageable to get 64 teams in a college football playoff, but right now the college football playoff rankings, Oregon stays at number one with an undefeated 11-0 record. They're followed by Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame, rounding out the top five. Next is Miami at number six, Georgia, Tennessee, Southern Methodist. SMU's
it.
SMU's at number nine with a 10-1 record. Indiana drops to number 10. Boise State, go Boise. They're at number 11. And then we've got Clemson back from the dead in the ACC at 9-2. And then just like we said, Alabama at 13, Ole Miss at 14, South Carolina. Oh, all of these mid-SEC teams just, like you said, hovering right on the bottom of that. Let's get rid of all of these mid-SEC teams.
I won't call South Carolina mid. They just need to get their quarterback situation straight. Here's the key, though, with the playoff is no matter, even if Clemson is 12 as of right now, they're not in because you still have to give the highest ranked the winner of the Big 12 that automatic top four.
Right, and I tell you what's going to happen. Clemson's going to lose. Alabama's going to win. They're both going to have 9-3 records, and the pollsters are going to put Alabama in at 12.
They still won't get in. They'll get in potentially. So we need for all of college football's sake, we need Auburn to win the Iron Bowl, which I believe they're capable of doing so. But what we need some more Big 12 chaos, and that needs to get cleared up between BYU, Arizona State, and Iowa State right now.
Yeah, that works for me.
Colorado still has an outside shot at it. They would need some things to fall into place. Actually, the Big 12 is a mess. There's a potential chaos situation where Baylor could wind up in the Big 12 championship game.
Well, and this is another situation where the NCAA simply doesn't exist anymore as an organizing body. The inmates are running the asylum, and these huge super conferences and all of the money that they generate are making their own rules. And so, like you said, it is chaos right now. It's anarchy in terms of the way that this football playoff system works.
There isn't enough balance amongst the conferences. So let's reset things back. If Oregon and all your traditional West Coast teams are back in the Pac-12 and everything is balanced, every conference would have equal say. So right now, if that was the case, or the Pac-12 is number one because they have Oregon, the Big 12 would be number two if they had Texas, and so on and so forth. There, it's so unbalanced,
right?
And it's all networking money.
Yeah, and I think, the only way that we could actually resolve something like this is if, and this is far-fetched, I know, but if the NFL stepped in and said, we want to reorganize college football as minor league professional football. Well, let's be honest, that's what it is. And then reorganize everything regionally, more or less, in the same way the NFL is, and then regulate it themselves. I mean, again, there are about 200 different things that could go wrong with that, but there needs to be a strong central organizing body to put things in place. That works in college basketball because the NCAA still has authority over the way the basketball playoffs work. They don't have any authority over the way the college football playoffs work, and that's the problem.
Yeah, the conferences like the SEC and the Big Ten want to basically govern the FBS, and that's not beneficial to the rest of the FBS. Look at what happened with the Pac-12. They're having to scrounge and merge with the Mountain West Conference just to have a viable football conference. That, like, think about the statement I'm about to say. Oregon State technically won the Pac-12 this year with a 1-0 conference record.
Yeah. All right. We're going to shift gears here. We're going to hear from Mr. Bueller about what's happening with Three Rivers College and their men's and women's basketball teams.
And there's quite a bit. Earlier in the show, we visited with TRC women's coach Alex Wiggs. And Wiggs and the Lady Raiders are on the road to Texas and are going to be playing Friday and Saturday at the Budke Serna Classic down there. On Friday, they are playing Paris Junior College, and then on Saturday, they are playing Trinity Valley in a match of two nationally ranked teams that both made it to the national tournament in Casper last spring, so that is going to be interesting.
And Mike, where are the Lady Raiders ranked nationally right now?
They are up to fourth, and for the second time this month, they have got a Region 16 Player of the Week. Kaylee Thompson, better known to many of us as KT, won the honor after a couple of big games this weekend, including a 10-rebound game against Shelton State on Friday night when the Raiders knocked off the number 6 team in the country. And then The following day, Kaylee had 24 points and 9 boards in a win over Vincennes.
Terrific. I'm looking forward to seeing the Lady Raiders play. Hopefully get to catch a couple of games over the upcoming holiday break.
That would be great. The men are going to be here in town this week. Tomorrow night they are playing, I believe, Southern Arkansas University Tech to kick off the Bank of Granting Thanksgiving tournament. And then on Friday they are playing Motlow State out of Tennessee. And then on Saturday, which is going to be the marquee game of this tournament, they are playing Northeastern Oklahoma A&M in what has become an early tough test for the Raiders basketball team. NEO is ranked or very close to being ranked and has had a couple of really good teams the last few years.
Excellent. Well, we want to invite everyone in Southeast Missouri, if you're close enough to come visit us at the Three Rivers campus, come and watch the men and women play in the upcoming weeks at the Libla Family Center. It's an exciting, both teams are exciting. There's a lot of excitement building for what they're going to be able to do this year. And, you know, it's a good time to be a Raider.
Yes, it is. And on that note, we are going to wrap up this edition of the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. We want to wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy the food tomorrow. And on behalf of everybody else, I'm Mike Buehler.
I'm Mark Sanders, and I'm going to extend this out just another second. Since you wished everybody a happy Thanksgiving, I want to ask you and Kyle, what's your favorite thing to eat around the Thanksgiving table?
Kyle, you go first.
Baked mac and cheese.
Ooh, baked mac and cheese, yes.
We haven't had that in a while, but it is hard to go wrong with really good cornbread dressing.
Oh yeah. My wife makes a good dressing too. It's my favorite thing. And I actually just prepared this today before he came out to record. It's a butternut squash vanilla bean soup.
Mmm, that sounds good.
Yeah. It's it's like warm pumpkin pie soup.
You're making me hungry, Mark.
Well, Thanksgiving is tomorrow for us. We're recording this on a Wednesday instead of our usual Thursday. So enjoy the food, enjoy the football, enjoy your family, and everybody have a safe and wonderful Thanksgiving. Again, I'm Mark Sanders.
This is Kyle Robbins.
And you have been listening to the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.